Welcome back to DC Cinematic Minute, the daily podcast where we analyze Zack Snyder's Justice League by each individual minute. My name is Nathan. You can find me on all social media at NoClutchNate. I was running out of breath there.
And my name is Mark. I'm not out of breath. My name is Mark. You can find me on all social media at Mark Meadows.
Yeah. Breathing exercises is what we were talking about beforehand.
And breathe in, breathe out.
From the core. Today
from
we
the
are
talking. Diaphragm.
This is a family show, Mark, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. Too graphic.
Today we are talking about minute number 212 of Zack Snyder's Justice League Part 6, Something Darker. This minute's going to start out with Darkseid looking upon the Justice League via boom tube. And the minute's going to end with Justice League, Jesus. The minute's going to end with Darkseid calling to ready the Armada. Ooh. Cliffhanger there. Literally definition of one, huh?
Yeah. He took one look at them and said, yeah, I'm not going through that portal.
We're too big.
The old ways.
Can't fit.
Oh, the portal's too
small.
Can't
fit through that thing.
Yeah, no. We only made it so that Steppenwolf's head could come through it. That's as much leeway as I got him.
Yeah, they didn't want
Steppenwolf would have won. He still would have had to crawl through it like a Chuck E. Cheese play tube or something.
Yeah.
Had to keep him down a peg at all times, so it wouldn't have been as gracious as he thought it would be. It's a Darkseid minute. It's an episode, a minute that is Darkseid's point of view, in this entire movie. So it's actually quite refreshing in a way, because in the entire movie we've seen Darkseid as kind of this intimidating direct object, or sometimes the person that the person with the POV is talking towards. And so this is kind of one of the first times we have Darkseid kind of taking control of the scene here. And he's got a good voice. You know, we've talked about Ray Porter a lot, and you know, there's a lot of fans of these movies that really celebrate Ray Porter and the job he did. You know, I'm always supportive of voice actors, like professional voice actors that you know are able to secure big roles. You know, lately it seems like celebrity voice acting is really just that. It's like the celebrity of it. Like, it's really taken over a lot of like the big roles. So not a lot of professional voice actors get the opportunity to do big stuff. So Ray Porter has always kind of been celebrated with the release of this film, and we've talked about him before. Just isolating just this minute and just talking about the voice here, when Desaad, who is played by a celebrity, Peter Guinness, he's talking about, like, I told you Steppenwolf would fail. And Darkseid, the way he starts it off, and he says, like, yes, with like this deep baritone voice. He says, yes, you did. There's that like affirmation that like Desaad wants. And it works out really well for the characters, you know, because it like shows. A little bit, I want to say, like, it makes Darkseid a little bit dynamic. It doesn't make him just like a static villain. Like, you start to see some kind of character, some kind of personality in him, of being this tyrant king who kind of listens to the hand. You know, it's not just like his way or nothing, even though of course he will have his way no matter what. But he definitely welcomes counsel from Desaad, and just being able to see that, you kind of see that relationship of how they work together. So overall, I just find this a really nice, comforting minute that just says like, oh yeah, this is an apocalypse moment and I want to see more of it.
I think, it really is an excellent storytelling moment here. And it's kind of like at like the basis of storytelling, isn't it? Like this is like what you said, king that kind of listens to the hand of the king or the worm tongue or whatever. But yeah, it's a very like in set in stone kind of storytelling like element or device, I think here. It kind of is a little bit of like exposition, but like in like the most like kind of like wrap up this thread storytelling device way that seems kind of like really cheesy and corny, but it like works so perfectly. And I think the dynamic between the two characters really kind of sells it a lot more in both, you know, like their size and stature and what we already know of Desaad being the one who speaks for Darkseid and Darkseid being, you know, king of darkness, ruler, whatever, Darkseid of darkness. But yeah, I think it's just a really excellent just kind of like wrap up. Close the thread kind of moment here. Also like kind of shutting the window too, you know, boom tube's kind of closing too. So it's like, yep, we're done with this this thought. Now we gotta go on and move on to like the cleanup and the follow-up of this whole story. Kind of the threat is over. However, there's a lingering cliffhanger that could mean something for the next installment. But you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a couple things here, obviously, with the gate closing, the Justice League staring at Darkseid as it closes. That shot of the Justice League cast, that was also another widely spread little behind the scenes clip of them on that green screen stage on that walkway. That was a real set stage walkway, like that part isn't CGI. But then they have like Ezra Miller, who's playing Barry Allen, standing there on the platform. And so they ask Ezra to kind of make this motion, and they have all these strobe lights flicker. And then he kind of does, Ezra kind of does like this break motion. And then they CG like him out of it and then back in, and and then like so in the movie you kind of see the character, you know, run into the frame when really Ezra is there the whole time. So
little Hollywood magic they got going on, huh?
Yeah. It's a very iconic behind-the-scenes clip of the Justice League cast here, and it was spread around before the Snyder Cut had come out. So everyone kind of would talk about, like, oh, they must be looking at Darkseid. We haven't seen this. It's not in the movie. We're not sure. I think maybe in the theatrical cut, like, a snippet of this is used when they're all looking at Steppenwolf being taken away. Yeah. By the parademons, but yeah. I don't know that it's obviously not this entire clip of the Justice League staring. I think it just might be. I think if anything, it has the part with Barry Allen running to join the team and stopping. I think they have that part. Maybe it's been a while since I've seen the movie, but I if I remember correctly, part of it is used. But yeah, it's another iconic part.
Oh well.
The part that I wanted to talk about and kind of question about, though, is the Desaad says, now that the mother boxes have been destroyed. And I thought that was interesting because I don't know that they are. Right? Like
he said, that's what he says.
Yeah, so
I'm rolling the tape back. Hang on. This is excellent listening. Yeah. So, they do get destroyed. I guess, like, that's maybe separation between, while it's, like, you know, 90% of the unity. Yeah. And then, you know, getting, like, ripped apart or, like, severed, I guess. I don't know. I guess they, Because we don't see them. What do we do? Do we see? I don't remember what happens. Do we see them?
Taking back to Star Labs, aren't they? Okay. No. In the theatrical cut, they are taken back to Star Labs.
All three of them are.
Yeah, probably not a good idea. They probably give it back. Hey, Queen Apolita, sorry about your friends, your sisters, and your lovers. Here's that box back. They're gonna have to build a new atrium.
I don't believe that. I don't believe that for one second. Because that means Diana would have to like take the box back to Themyscira, and oops, I guess that means you're not banished anymore. Where we only see the.
That's a good idea, though.
Yeah, but we only see the unbanishing in this one with the Arrow of Artemis.
Well,
that's what that means.
Oh, that is the she's unbanished because she got that arrow, right?
She whispered in the arrow, come back to me, Diana. So that's like, okay, guess I can come home.
Yeah, bring the box with you.
That would be fun, but I don't remember what happens to the boxes.
Buried under another 6 feet of dirt.
All of them. Give it in concrete.
Here, Mara, guard this mother box and maybe hire one additional Atlantean if you can afford it. Maybe get some walls around this thing.
Or like a really mean shark that they could find.
Yeah.
And just like
get one of them pirate sharks.
Or like a whole bunch of beta fish.
Yeah.
And they're just like constant, they're just all fighting each other, and like you gotta swim through the fighting beta fish. That's funny. That's funny. Laugh. You gotta swim through a football field size of fighting beta fish. Covering every square inch. There's no fin room. There's no.
Yeah, I'm thinking no of Shark Tale. They're using the elbow, but it's like the fin. Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah, they do. They do have joints in those.
Give it to the Shark Mafia from Shark Tale.
Yeah,
they'll take care of it. They'll take care of it. Okay?
They'll take care of it.
Yeah,
but that's how you do it in Atlantis. I don't remember what happens to the mother boxes.
Just covered in barnacles again.
This is pretty good that you're bringing up the whole that they're destroyed. I don't even think I cared to pay attention to that detail specifically. I just thought it'd be like, that means be like, okay, good. They like now you can separate them. Now you can guard them better, I guess.
How could they be? I mean, it's also weird because Cyborg is Mother Box, so like, it's not destroyed.
Like, do you think he can still like access the servers? Like, he still is a mother. So if someone really needed to use a mother box, it'd be like, grab that guy. I think we talked about this. Does he have like full mother box access? Does he have full ability? Because he's clearly not a weird sister or, you know, a daughter of fate.
Yeah, or I was also thinking of like father boxes now. And is there a father box?
That's different. That's Young Justice, right? That was Young Justice?
Yeah. There could be a father box. I wouldn't doubt it being like...
Maybe it did happen in Forever People. I don't know. I don't remember. Yell at me.
But yeah. I'm just trying to think like the parademons as well. The parademons were made from the mother box. Is it using the mother box stuff to make parademons? Is that needed? I think I can safely say that this universe planned to just have these three mother boxes and that there's not more of them.
Right.
But
Begs the question of like, how was Steppenwolf? I think we asked the same question before. Now we're just going in circles. How was Steppenwolf able to get from planet to planet, star system to conquer all these things? He must have had spaceships, but he didn't arrive on Earth in a spaceship. He came through a boom tube. How did he get through a boom tube? And it was it because the mother box just was like, totally, I'm awake. Check it. I got a crack in the casing, so I can send like a signal out, and that signal is whatever. Find Space Knight, and
yeah, he definitely
tell him
had
I'm
a
here.
Ship. I'm pretty sure he has a ship like in orbit or something, and then boom tubed in, and then yeah, you're right, Nate. Like, where's that? This is a very good question. Okay,
these are the questions. Why aren't we cool enough to have like? Why aren't we cool enough to sit down with Zack Snyder and be like, "Hey, how's Superman put on those fucking boots? Hey, what did Steppenwolf have ships set in orbit? Hey, did the Themyscirans rebuild the cage? Because that's like clearly, was it only used for the Mother Box, or was that like an actual like, you know, did they need to? And anyway, these are just the silly questions that.
Mm-hmm.
I need answered. There was another one from a movie that was like burning, and I can't remember what it was. And it was like, dang.
The
boots is the biggest thing. I will not get over that hill.
The boots are part of the costume, or he puts on the tights and then into the boots, but they're not connected.
It's There's not no like seam, jumpsuit. Unless it's well, just like unless yeah. they.
They
I don't know.
Digitally edit them out. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. But yeah, the mother boxes, I think it's safe to say they're not destroyed. I think he misspoke. I think he meant the Unity is destroyed. But he's probably like, you know what? Forget it. It's in their possession.
He wouldn't misspeak, though.
Yeah, but what if he's like a liar? What if he's lying, though? What if he's just like, yeah, don't pay attention to that. Because I'm pretty sure Desaad is like the main villain of the second part. Because he's going to be the god of cunning at this point and like manipulate his way. I'm pretty sure it was talked about in the second movie. He would be, he would find a new liaison being Lex Luthor. And I think that was going to be the new route where it's like you have two masterminds behind everything and then they're going to be kind of championing Darkseid, and then everything goes to shit at the end because they're playing both sides of things. And then part three is like, I don't know, wacky stuff.
Wacky races.
Yeah. And that's probably where
part three is just the sequel to the Speed Racer movie. Come
on,
baby.
That's probably where the Joker comes in. Like, the Joker being part of, I'm skipping ahead, but that's, it's probably like the third film is where the Joker comes in. It's like, hey, at this point, it's just Resident Evil Apocalypse, but with DC characters. So we can literally do whatever we want because this movie's about to end.
I wanted to watch that movie recently, like within the past couple months. And I know I have it somewhere because it was like one of, I had a aftermarket copy of the movie on a CD somewhere. And I knew that I had like that case of CDs.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I want to watch that movie because that was like one of the first ones that I got for like my own DVD player that I like had in my room.
And it happened to be Resident Evil.
Resident Evil Apocalypse was like the one that was like right on top of that case. It was a clear case. So it was just like always on my mind. Anyway, I couldn't find it. And I didn't end up watching it, so I haven't seen
that
movie
recently.
I wanted to. I had the very, like, instant urge to be like, I want to watch that Resident Evil movie, because I remember I really liked it.
Okay, but did you want to rewatch the first and second one, too? Or are you just like, no, I just want to watch the third one again?
No, just the third one. The second
one... So interesting.
I just remember, like... I don't know. I just didn't like it that much.
It's understandable.
And the first one is dope. I mean, it's kind of like one of those like TV sci-fi channel movies. It's like, oh, mm-hmm. Okay, so they're playing
the first movie has like it has TV movie energy and this low budget part, but it for some reason it makes it better that way. Like it just. It's like, this movie rocks. I love how low budget it is. And like the scale, I guess that's what it is. It's a small scale thing, since it works out very well for itself. I think I over romanticized the second one because I love the Raccoon City part of Resident Evil. Like, I love Resident Evil 2 and 3. And of course, I love Jill Valentine in that kind of classic Raccoon City way. And
I got scared of Nemesis when I was young. So I remember that's like another reason why I didn't care to watch that movie. But you know, I got over that. I'm not scared of him anymore. Come on. But I'm
scared of him to this day.
I don't remember. I feel like I just don't remember the way that movie ended. I don't like the way that movie ended.
I don't like the way the movie ended either.
With the helicopter crash and the girl and I was just like,
the nuclear bomb what? And it's like it, but it feels so anticlimactic.
I also don't know. So like I remember watching Apocalypse and it's like, okay, so this is obviously a sequel. So like that accounts for the bomb. So like they got that, but it kind of turned, you know, I just liked it because it turned more Mad Maxy. And I was all about that shit. And I was like, hell yeah. Like, let's do Mad Max, but Resident Evil. Like, you're almost there, kind of. But, you know, let's get that shit going.
You're probably the only person who was asking for it. But
probably, because then the same thing with Terminator Salvation. That movie's fucking awesome. Because it's like a little Mad Maxy.
It's just like the
post-apocalyptic. And sometimes they're not all good. Don't get me wrong. They're not all great, but there's elements out of a lot of them that it's like, that's cool. I like what you did there. That's pretty sweet. When Christian Bale's on that highway and he kicks out that boombox and he starts playing the music and those hunter killers are like coming at him, it's like, dang, this is a cool Terminator part.
You say hunter killer?
Yeah, I was talking about Salvation at that point, not Resident Evil anymore.
Yeah, well, is that what they call them? Hunter killers?
Hunter killers. The flying... Yeah, they're hunter killer. Hunter killers.
Hunter killers. Okay.
Hunters slash killers, I guess. Or
there's like a weird... Okay, like... That like hit my brain in such a weird way. So
I don't know what is it? Cyberdyne classification number?
Like the T-600, is? T-800. Yeah. Yeah,
you're better at that.
But like, listen to this tangent. Listen to this thread. It's like James Cameron, he created the Terminator.
Uh-huh.
And in this Terminator Salvation, which I'm assuming he produced, he's like, so these robots are called Hunter Killers. But he's also a really big fan of Alita. And Christoph Waltz's character is a Hunter Killer. Because that's what the Alita lore is. Like, these bounty hunters, they're called hunter killers, right? I'm not making this up. And they're in the Alita movie.
I only saw Alita once.
Which, although directed by Robert Rodriguez, it was produced by James Cameron, who really wants this trilogy to be made. So much so that he sold one of his private estates because his kids have grown up and moved out and...
Too many bedrooms, too many trees.
Too many landlines
going into that big. And we got to take these things out.
And then soon after selling that estate, he announced that they're working on Alita 2, the sequel. And although it wasn't a huge commercial success, he still wants to make those movies, just like he's planning on making the Avatar franchise. So no matter what, he's going to finance the making of the Alita movies because he loves that franchise so much so that anytime you buy an Alita manga, his quote is on there because he's the most highly regarded testimonial on of that franchise, and everyone's just like, yeah, James Cameron loves this, so we're gonna make sure his quote's on there.
That's pretty sick. That's like, imagine having like such a love for like Astro Boy that like you like buy all of the rights to everything Astro Boy and you're like, fuck yeah, dude. I got like original manga shit at like, I own it, yo. Like, this is my thing to do whatever I want with it.
Yeah. I think that's the thing too. It's like, he doesn't want to directly adapt something. Like, he doesn't want to be labeled as a director of an adaptation, which all his movies are pretty much original works. But they're all very heavily influenced by other things. So then he gave it to Robert Rodriguez and said, hey, direct this movie. But anyways, long story short, Hunter Killer, Alita, Terminator Salvation, Hunter Killers. It's like, oh, maybe he came up with that. Maybe he called the robot that because he was like, hey, I read this really cool name called Hunter Killers from Alita, and I thought that was cool because I love robots hunting humans. I thought that was really cool. So also, I want to direct this Alita movie. Which maybe he read it during that time, and then he was like, I should make a movie about this. I like that. Thank
What's the Alita manga called? Isn't it called
Battle
different?
Angel Alita?
Battle like Angel?
Reverse okay. than the movie.
That's cool as shit. That's like if like you gave me all of the money in the world and they were like, try to adapt a franchise that's like really dear to your heart that or like something that like you love like so much. And like my initial thought would be like, oh fuck, I gotta do Gundam. But I
or
can't
Robotech.
Because yeah, that's what I was just gonna say, dude. I was gonna be like, dude, I would do fucking Robotech. Imagine the cool fucking shit you can do with jets that transform into robots. You guys are like, oh yeah, Transformer. It's like, yeah, no, I get that. Starscream's bad fucking ass, but you don't get enough of that. And he's also like his own kind of evil man. It's like, no. You just want like the jet to be that versatile and you go back to the story of like the pilots and stuff. That's why Gundam works so goddamn well, even today. It's because like you get those strong. Anyway, I would do Robotech.
The proof is there. I mean, not to stay too long on Transformers, but Starscream has some of the best shots in that Bayformers franchise.
Yeah,
because as a bipedal humanoid thing that then goes airborne, the way that they always transform Starscream to be like, oh, I'm gonna jet off now,
I'm flying
like,
now, yeah,
it's like that's the coolest fucking thing. And then so they had this video game, Transformers War for Cybertron, where you could do just that. You were an over the shoulder, you know, run and gun character, but at any moment if you were a plane flying one, if you wanted to transform, you'd then be flying in the virtual space. And that was one of the coolest things in multiplayer, was just like, I'm going to, you know,
transform
in air, land on the ground, shoot some guys. If they start hurting me badly, I'm going to transform and fly on out of there. And then rinse and repeat. It was a very roguelike thing to do. And Super Macross or Robotech, it works really well. And not to be afraid of it, because like Pacific Rim, everyone thought that was like stepping on the heels of Transformers, but it's like
it's its own thing.
It stood its ground and was like, no, this isn't Transformers. This is something totally different. But there's a lot of like influence that it's taken in, and I think that's what Robotech really needs. Is like take Top Gun, take Pacific Rim, and kind of like put them together and really show the scale. And all like,
yeah.
How many engines per muscle does this plane need to like transform?
They did Takashi Mike did at least one Battleship Yamato, and that's essentially the same exact thing as like White Base on Gundam, and also Super Dimensional Fortress from Super Macross and Robotech.
I think Battleship Yamato was Takashi Yamazaki. Who did -1? Yeah. So, but either way,
I think it was Takashi Mike.
Is we'll that
anyway?
Yeah.
But yeah. So the point is, it's like there's already like a live action Super Battle Fortress like movie, and it's halfway decent, you know. And it's one of those like magnet release movies, so there's, you know, the budget and everything, and it's still an independent film, but it's a passionately made independent film that holds true to the original content, anime, manga stuff. Anyway,
yeah,
hell yeah, dude. I need to watch that again, because I was watching like the newer anime that came out, I don't know, in like 2014 or something along those lines, and I was like I got sucked right into it, just like how I would. I was like waiting for them to release some Gundam, I guess, which from October or something at the time, and they were only releasing them per week. And I was like, well, I'm gonna wait. And I ended up watching that, and I was like, this is great. Anyway, I just talked about like 10 minutes on this.
It's
on nothing. I'm so sorry.
It totally relates. I mean, he says, ready the armada in this minute. Armada is in ships. Like, come on now. It's done. We're back. We're dinosaurs.
Roll back the clock. Baby, yeah. Dawn of time.
Yeah. Give him that chow that makes him really smart. Nathan really needs it. It's this ready the armada bit that happens here. Yeah, obviously it's supposed to lead into the sequel, but the part that I want to talk about the most, is, you know, I wanted to go back to the mother boxes not being destroyed. I personally think that the mother boxes still might be of use. So, it might be that they're put away, but I have a feeling that when the Justice League are like, oh yeah, you know, let's go to Apocalypse, let's take the fight to Darkseid and stuff like that, let's get really cosmic with this Justice League universe, those mother boxes, they'll tap into it and discover boom tube technology or something like that, or maybe not. Now that I think about it, maybe they'll just say, oh, Cyborg has the ability to create the boom tubes on his own. Yeah, I guess it leans back to what you were saying, Nathan, of like just one of those things you'd like to ask Zack Snyder or anyone
else.
It's
all just speculation at this point. I mean, like,
yeah,
it doesn't matter, which is infuriating, but also it makes for good speculation.
Yeah.
A little food for thought, if you will.
Yeah.
I will say the line of dialogue, ready the armada, is still just so regal. I was gonna say like regalic, but that's not a word.
Yeah, there's way too many syllables for the word.
It's so regal in the same, you know, Shakespearean sense that like I am eating it up. That's one thing that I am really bummed that I don't have. And you know, if it exists in Rebel Moon, that's probably like a little treat that's waiting for me for when I watch the director's cut. Is like this Shakespearean dynamic and kind of like reimagining of these familiar dynamics.
I really hope so.
With supporting dialogue, like give me a little bit of a pantometer so I can be like, oh yeah, totally, like that's believable. That way I don't have to like worry about, you know, bullshit concerns like where's the Star Trek Universal Translator? Like, how do they know what he's saying? It's like, oh, it doesn't matter. If he's speaking like old English, like as if it was like the 16th century, it's like, yeah, no, I don't care if it's English is whatever, like basic language, all of that's cool. Whatever. Star Wars is this
idea. Star Wars would be, yeah.
It's like, that's cool as hell, but like, yeah. Give your character a little bit of flair, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, it works out.
Star Wars, sometimes when someone says, like, what the hell? It's like, oh, so you guys have, you have a hell. You have hell. You know what? You got Christianity there. Dope.
Yeah. Yeah.
It spread that wide, huh? Dang. That's insane.
That's very funny. Yeah.
Anyway, that goes not just for Star Wars. That goes for anything that's like fantastical or like sci-fi or whatever. Especially if it's like an off-world and like not named specifically. Like that guy's from Earth. Avengers did it. It's one of like my favorite examples of it in Avengers when Tony and Doctor Strange meet the Guardians. And it's the whole like, what master do you serve? Like, what am I supposed to say? Jesus? It's like, you're from Earth. It's like, dang, that's fucking quick. I like that. That's I really dig that. It's like hell yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's not just like a, I don't know. It's more so just like, oh, you know of that book. Like, if he were to say something like Peter Rabbit, it'd be like, oh, shit, so you know Alice. Peter Rabbit, what's that? No, that's not Alice. Yeah. I was going to say.
There's Peter Rabbit, and then there's Peter Cottontail, which are two different characters.
Oh, God. Right? Yeah, you're right. And then there's the you know, rabbit with the cool pocket watch.
Yeah.
That guy's always late.
That guy's cracked out. I mean, it was...
That dude's speedballing it.
Yeah. Man needs an intervention. He's
always late. Dang.
Was it that they were each representing a different drug?
I don't know. That's like, I think that's up to the reader, baby.
Yeah, that's what we call interpretation.
Yeah. Yeah. It is supposed to, you know, yeah, drugs were involved anyway.
Yeah. I really like the kind of industrial quality of this DC cinematic universe. It's another thing I kind of wanted to talk about that I think is important. And so, something that we're going back to, and the reason I'm talking about the mother boxes, talking about, you know, like as future technology gets more and more advanced, it starts to get more and more civilized. I think Star Wars, again, another great example, kind of showing the evolution and then showing the decay of that evolution. And speaking about Robotech and things that make Gundam and Robotech that like makes it really appealing to me is seeing kind of the industrial part underneath all the future technology. And I like seeing that here in the DC Cinematic Universe. I'm hoping to really fall in love with Rebel Moon because I think it does have that. I know there's kind of like this grungy, heavy metal Star Wars stuff to it already, but it's the appreciation of all that grimy stuff that's making the technology work. That's the stuff I really like. Not to say I don't like Star Trek stuff because I love Star Trek, but it's just like I like it either way. Sometimes I like seeing just nice uniforms and carpet everywhere too. Sometimes I think that's really cozy. It's like it's like my two wolves, my two inner wolves.
dirty grungy space junk versus
Star Trek
felt walls, wall to wall carpeted. Yeah, and mahogany.
And just the hum of that engine. You know.
Listen, I put a 10-hour YouTube video of that like engine hum brown noise to sleep almost so often at night. It is one of the best things that I have found for myself to fall asleep.
The bridge ambiance.
That one kind of has like talking in the background, so like it's a little bit too loud. It's the engine's not. They also have like a night shift one. That one's pretty neat because... you still get a couple beeps and boops of the computer, but it's not so frequent because, you know, it's night shift and it's a little bit dimmer. Anyway, you could find a black screen, 10-hour brown noise, smoothed out brown noise, and you'd be like, this is the hum of a Starship engine, and I'm going to pass out. Do it all the time. Take it from me.
Very well said.
One thing I did want to say at the end of all of this, and it's in reference to the beginning of the minute, last minute we were talking about how cool that CGI Batman looked dropping down and just doing a sideways shoulder pose pretty much. This Batman, way less cooler.
This is
the Batman that it's like, oh, now I remember why I didn't like this guy.
Yeah.
Now he just doesn't look good here. It just looks like man in costume.
It looks like an action figure.
It looks like a cardboard cutout.
Yeah, Ben, why don't you stand right here? Don't move. He's like, I can't move. Have you seen how much padding?
I got too much shit on me. That's what it looks like. It looks like I got too much shit on me.
Yeah, I can't fucking move in this thing.
Yeah.
Just tell me when it's over, because I can't even see through the goggles. They spray painted them black.
inside. Yeah. So I can't see.
I can't see shit in this thing. Just let me know when it's over.
It's some sort of welding glass. Like I don't get it. That is good. That's good stuff. This Batman way less cooler than the CGI armor-plated Batman. That's not even armor-plated.
It reminds me of
shoulder-plated Batman.
I didn't mention it yesterday, but the CGI Batman reeling up after landing kind of reminds me of the Batman in the abandoned hospital fight scene with Superman in the last movie, and when he kind of drops down, he like grapples down and Superman's
he
like
slows the grapple and like he just like is able to
he slows down.
It's not like a fall. It's like
and
an
he starts
actual,
wrapping
like,
up the grappling hook. Like that to me was very like I feel like I'm watching, and this is probably going supporting why we have to support artists and not like AI tools, because it looks now I can say, because now I have this in my head, but at the time I was, when we had recorded that episode, I was saying how much it feels like it looks like a cutscene from like a Final Fantasy game, because of how like cathedral the abandoned hospital looks, and like this armored Batman, like it just looked so
it was a low angle too.
It looked so interesting. Like it looked like it had like this heavy Christian mythology that was like extremely cracked out, and now I look at it and with like the big zeitgeist of AI stuff, it looks like someone would have created that in AI and said like, this is what happens if Batman was like in Demon Souls or something like that, and they put that through the prompt and it would spit out that exact image.
Okay, I get what you're saying. Yeah.
And that's like the importance of having these directors with these visions. That's what we have here. It's like, you know, what if what if Darkseid was really into Shakespeare and put that through the prompt, and we probably would get something similar.
I mean, I'm gonna keep that idea in the back of my head here, because I'm gonna put that through some AI. That sounds like a fun time.
Don't put that through AI. Just
not just Darkseid, other characters.
It's a crutch. That's what I'm saying. Look at all these banner of wars that they have in the background. All these soldiers, the cool apocalypse banner.
There's stained glass imagery of Darkseid's face. Yeah, yeah, that's
someone had to draw
that's heavy,
and make
Doc.
Darkseid stained glass. I wish it was a little bit more storytelling in the thing. Like it, they were just like, yeah, just put his face on there. It's like,
yeah,
damn, you couldn't do
like dang.
You couldn't do like the betrayal, like the Steppenwolf betrayal. You couldn't have that in there, or
him
sort of
like taking
prophecy.
Up a crown or something. Yeah, like
yeah, or like
anything like that. We got the Superman stained glass imagery.
Yeah, and then in Dawn of Justice, we had the painting that Lex Luthor really liked. So that was another imagery. Like that's what we're missing here. Show me like the three mother boxes, like the unities. There's like a yellow pane, a blue pane, and a red pane, and then like I don't know, the anti-life equation
fire.
Or something.
Yeah,
yeah. Something, but come on now, just do a little bit more with these. They just said no. Just take his face and put it on there like he's a Funko Pop or something. You know.
Yeah. Like a Wendy's. It's like a Wendy's in here.
Yeah, this is back when Wendy's had that fucking arboretum.
Dude, I'd go to fucking Hell Planet Wendy's. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, the fucking 90s of Wendy's with the glass ceiling.
With like all like the oak. Oh, yeah. And the sunrooms?
Yeah, the sunroom one with the vines on it. Yeah. That's when Wendy's used to be really good.
Yeah, when you can get a biggie bag, biggie meal, and it was yellow.
Back when the salads were like the thing you got at Wendy's. I feel like
baked potatoes.
I feel like fast food restaurants, they don't do salads anymore.
We were talking about this.
McDonald's doesn't have a salad.
They didn't tell anybody that they were stopping that. Like, they were just like, yeah, no, we just
can't have. There's not a single vegetarian thing on McDonald's menu.
Let's go to Taco Bell, baby. Spiced potato soft taco all day, every day.
Yeah. Entire vegan menu.
All right, well, we're going to wrap up for today. If you've enjoyed today's show, please consider leaving us a 5-star review. It really does help the show and helps new listeners discover the show as well. If you'd like to join in on the conversation, you can find us on Twitter at DCEUMinute. And if you'd like bonus content, we have a Patreon for just $3 with tons of other podcasts to listen to. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you here next time on DC Cinematic Minute.